Welcome back to TRP.
Hi, and welcome back to the Ross Lair podcast. I'd like to discuss now Ireland's 9/11 at the hands of Oliver Cromwell. I first heard about 9/11 when I was sitting on my own, sipping a cappuccino in a little coffee shop in Greystones back in 2009. Two older men, professor types, were in deep discussion about what had happened on the 11th of September. I know what you're thinking. What planet has this guy been living on? 9/11 happened in 2001, and I can understand you thinking that. Most people know where they were when they heard the news about the Twin Towers. So do I. I was in a music shop on Cable Street, Dublin, gazing up at a television as I witnessed the live images of the second plane alter course and crash into the South Tower, erupting in a ball of flames. Bush vows terror will not defeat freedom. Another headline read, "I saw things nobody should ever see." So how can I say I first heard about 9/11 in a coffee shop 8 years after the event? Well, I am purposely misleading you, trying to bring your attention to the fact that Ireland suffered its own 9/11. An event every bit as horrific, brutal and savage as it was for those poor souls who lost their lives in the Twin Towers. On September the 11th, 1649, the County Louth town of Drogheda was the scene of one of the worst massacres to take place on Irish soil. The man behind the massacre was none other than Oliver Cromwell, one of the most despised men in Irish history. Parliament had planned to reconquer Ireland since 1641. Cromwell's invasion of 1649 was much larger, and with the Civil War in England over, his army could be regularly reinforced and resupplied. On that day, Cromwell, who had come to Ireland to quell any further dissent to English rule, breached the walls of Drogheda, and his troops swarmed into the town. Those inside were promised that if they lay down their arms, they would be spared further bloodshed. But once they did so, they were slain in cold blood. The officers and soldiers were first to be put to the sword, followed by the men, women and children. Cromwell was later to describe the scene as glorious but cruel. Cromwell's hate of the Irish was religious as well as political. He harboured contempt for the Catholic Church, which he believed sought to undermine the teachings of the Bible in favour of papal and clerical authority, which he held responsible for the tyranny and persecution of Protestants in continental Europe. His tolerance of the different Protestant churches did not extend to the Catholics, and the measures taken by him against Catholics, particularly in Ireland, have been characterised by some as genocidal or near genocidal. Cromwell, upon riding into the town of Drogheda, was enraged by the sight of heaps of parliamentarian dead at the breach. Morrell states, "It was the sight of fallen comrades that was the occasion of Cromwell's issuing the order for no quarter." In Cromwell's words, "In the heat of the action, I forbade them, my soldiers, to spare any that were in the arms of the town. That night they put to the sword about 2,000 men." It is not fully clear how many civilians died in the sacking of Drogheda. Cromwell's list of the dead, when reporting to Parliament, included many inhabitants. Hugh Peters, a military chaplain on Cromwell's Council of War, gave the loss to be 3,552, of whom about 2,800 were soldiers, meaning that between 700 and 800 civilians had been killed. Who was Oliver Cromwell? Cromwell was born in 1599 and was an English general and statesman. He was born into a wealthy family and a descendant of the Thomas Cromwell family. The unfortunate Thomas was stripped of all his titles and was publicly beheaded on Tower Hill on the 28th of July 1540, the same day Henry VIII married Catherine Howard. I think it is understandable that his descendant, Oliver Cromwell, had no great love for the monarchy. Elected as a Member of Parliament for Huntingdon in 1628 during the reign of George I, Cromwell was incensed when Charles found things a little hot to handle and simply suspended Parliament, much to the annoyance of those serving there. Parliament was suspended for 11 years. This period became known as the 11 Years' Tyranny. In 1642, civil war broke out between those loyal to Charles, known as the Loyalists, and the Parliamentarians, opposing the King, known as the Roundheads because of the shape of their helmets. Cromwell soon became one of the main commanders who oversaw the defeat of the Loyalists and was third to sign the execution papers for Charles I on grounds of treason. On Tuesday, the 31st of January, 1649, Charles went to his death outside the banqueting house in Whitehall. It was to become one of the most divisive and controversial moments in English history. Some saw it as a martyrdom of a king, others a step towards democracy. Charles's son was banished from the country and Cromwell became the Lord Protector of England, Scotland, Wales and Ireland and its overseas territories, and he ruled it as a republic. In 1657, Oliver Cromwell was offered the crown by Parliament. Though the idea appealed to him, he could not accept, considering he fought for a republic. On the 13th of April, 1657, he made clear that God's providence had spoken against the office of king. "I would not seek to set up that which providence had destroyed and laid to dust, and I would not build Jericho again." These were his words. But he did accept being reinstated as Lord Protector with greater powers than he previously had. He had King Edward's chair moved from Westminster Abbey to Westminster Hall, and with all the pomp and regalia of a coronation, he took up his role as Lord Protector. Though no sceptre, crown or orb was present at the ceremony, they were present on the Lord Protector's seal. Cromwell described himself as a humble servant and protector, a watchdog for the nation. This did not sit easy on the shoulders of many citizens, considering Cromwell had never gained, nor had he asked, for the consent of the nation. Under Cromwell, his republic fought against the Dutch before negotiating a peace treaty. He then set his sights on the Spanish colonies of the West Indies, which resulted in the invasion of Jamaica and the establishment of a British colony. Aware of the contribution the Jewish community had made to the economic success of the Dutch, he encouraged Jews to return to Britain 350 years after they had been banished by Edward I. He hoped by so doing they would help the financial recovery after the Civil War. Cromwell died of natural causes in 1658 and was buried in Westminster Abbey. Oddly, and at odds with the idea of a republic, Cromwell was succeeded by his son Richard, who was weak and unpopular. A coup was mounted in Parliament, and the monarchy was restored. Charles I's son ascended to the throne as Charles II. Cromwell's body was exhumed from Westminster Abbey on the 30th of January 1661, the 12th anniversary of the execution of Charles I, and he was subjected to a posthumous execution. His body was hanged in chains at Tyburn, London, and then thrown into a pit. His head was cut off and displayed for 4 years on a pole outside Westminster Hall. Afterwards, it was owned by various people and went on sale in 1814. It was publicly exhibited several times before being buried beneath the floor of the antechapel at Sidney Sussex College, Cambridge in 1960. The exact position is not publicly disclosed, but a plaque marks the approximate location. It reads, "Near to this place was buried on March the 25th, 1960, the head of Oliver Cromwell, Lord Protector of the Commonwealth of England, Scotland and Ireland, fellow commoner of this college." Total excess deaths for the entire period of the War of the Three Kingdoms in Ireland was estimated by Sir William Petty, the 17th century economist, to be 600,000 out of a total Irish population of 1.4 million people. More modern estimates put the figure closer to 200,000 people out of a population of 2 million. The sieges of Drogheda and Wexford have been prominently mentioned in histories and literature up to the present day. James Joyce, for example, mentioned Drogheda in his novel Ulysses. What about the sanctimonious Cromwell and his Ironsides that put the women and the children of Drogheda to the sword with the biblical text, God is love, pasted around the mouth of his cannons? Similarly, Winston Churchill, writing in 1957, described the impact of Cromwell on Anglo-Irish relations. Upon all of these, Cromwell's record was a lasting bane. By an incomplete process of terror, by an iniquitous land settlement, by the virtual proscription of the Catholic religion, by the bloody deeds already described, he cut new gulfs between the nations and the creeds. To hell or to Connaught were the terms he thrust upon the native inhabitants. And they, for their part, across 300 years of history, have used as their keenest expression of hatred, the curse of Cromwell upon you. Upon all of us, there still lies the curse of Cromwell. Those last words are not mine. They are the words of Winston Churchill. And this is where my confusion lies. How can a man who was so deeply involved in the overthrowing of the monarchy in England, a Puritan who had conspired to have King George I publicly beheaded, a man who was exhumed from the vaults of Westminster Abbey to be posthumously hung and decapitated, a man with the blood of thousands on his hands, including that of a king, and who was so lowly spoken of by Winston Churchill, a man who ruled England as a republic, yet somehow his son assumed power upon his death, as if he were, in fact, a king. How, I ask you, in all sincerity, can a statue to a man like that stand on a plinth outside the Houses of Parliament? Keep on listening to TRP.